This is tape two, side one of an interview with Mrs. Vance Robinson. We were talking about Conyers Vance Williams and her capacity to do wonderful things with the family. Did she live in this house?
Yes, yes. And when she became ill, my mother came home to take care of her. And after she passed away in 72, my mother remained here. But now, when you're speaking of one who has been really the backbone of the family, I think my mother sort of stepped right into her shoes. She might have actually been in her shoes all along. Although I was in college, at the same time some of my cousins and my mother's sisters were in college, my mother helped all of us, helped the sisters and the cousins just as if they were her children. She was by far the most unselfish woman in the entire family. Also, I don't believe my mother ever had an evil thought in her entire life, which made her different. She was, I think of her as a saint. Also very bright, my mother was well read. I remember one Christmas when we were home, she averaged 3 books in 1 week, and my mother did not read junk. And that is the reason why when she passed away, we asked that in lieu of flowers, that contributions be made to the Louise Vance Martin Memorial Library, which is now completed and which will be dedicated in October of this year.
Oh, wonderful.
Which I hope that you will be present with us.
Many family connections with King's Chapel. Mm-hmm. I believe you told me while we were changing the tape that Conyers Williams
was secretary for many years. She was secretary of the church. And my mother was also the organist and pianist for the church and for the Sunday school. And then I came along in later years and served in the same capacity.
Did Conyers Vance Williams teach?
No.
Her entire work was with the family.
With the family. The teaching that was done went on just right within the family. But to tell you the truth, when my mother Conyers finished high school, there was a couple in Anderson. I don't remember the name, but a minister and his wife wanted her to come to Anderson to attend this little college, a little normal school, because they wanted her, they thought that she was so bright, they thought that she would make an excellent teacher. But she fell in love with a man by the name of Charlie Williams. And I asked her one day, we were talking about the opportunity that she had to go to college. She said, you know, I could have gone on to college, but I didn't, because I had to show those girls who could get Charlie Williams.
And she did. Tell us a little bit about him.
Charlie Williams was a blacksmith. I saw a picture of him once. A very, very handsome man. His mother's name was Lucy Williams, and they lived on Bell Minor Street, and they had 2 sons, James Garfield and Charlie. And it was a short-lived marriage. He worked away from home most of the time. It seems that he worked in a blacksmith shop here, and then he got a job in Anderson, and he would come up on the weekends. Because when my grandfather's wife died, Mother Conyers and Charlie Williams took his 2 daughters, my mother and her sister, to live with them. And my mother said that at the time when all 4 of the children were there, his 2 children, and then my mother and her sister, that she remembers how he would come up from Anderson on weekends. And I remember hearing about how he always wore her very pretty dresses. She was a pretty lady. And the silk stockings. Women wore cotton stockings in those days, but she didn't. She always wore silk hose. And then there was an elderly man here by the name of Mr. Alexander, John Alexander, who passed him a few years ago. And he remembers Mother Conyers in her younger days, and he talked about what a pretty lady she was. He said, now, her husband, we called him a sport. He was a kind of the man that all the ladies were attracted to. And he referred to him as sport. And another gentleman, Jim Kemp, who lived on Bell Minor, he passed on, I think, last year, Fusilier. He remembers him also. And he said that when they lived in the country, on Sunday afternoons, Charlie Williams would be all dressed up with his shoes shine and his suit, and he would drive down in his T-model. And it seems that he and another man were the only two in town who had a car. And he said he remembered he used to love to, as a kid, he would stand there looking down at Charlie Williams' shoes. And he just wondered, how on earth could anyone get shoes shine like that? And he always gave them some money, you know, a dime or nickel or something like that.
What happened afterwards? Did Charlie Williams move away?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. He went to Washington, D.C. And he passed away, I believe he was only in his 30s mm-hmm. when he died. And Mother Conyers never married again. And she was young, too. She was in her early 30s. In fact, she reared me. I don't think she ever even looked at another man. Her life became the church.
Working through my own family, my great-grandmother is somebody that nobody knows anything about. But I tried to deduce what she was like by looking at her daughters. And if we take Conyers and go back and try to imagine what Martha Burt Vance was like, this had to be the type of mother that could produce a daughter like Conyers, don't you think?
I believe so. I remember when Grandma Martha lived here with Uncle Emmanuel, and he was sort of handicapped. He was bent, his back was bent. He could not stand up straight, but he wasn't always that way. And we lived on Bell Minor. And I can remember Mother Conyers would prepare her mother's meal every day. And he would come through the woods, and we could look and see him coming across the field with the basket, coming for the dinner. And she would prepare dinner for Uncle Emmanuel and her mother. And then he would, and I thought about it, you know, since I've been in the village, I know that food had to be cold by the time he got the, but I'm sure they heated it probably on the fireplace because that's where the meals, you know, were cooked. But he would pull that, that's quite a hill there, down that hill, up another, and then across the field to the house on Bell Minor where we were living. And she did that for years. I suppose they made their own breakfast or something, but she did the dinner.
Let's go to your grandfather, Charles Burgess Vance, and his wife first. Who was she?
Yes, my grandmother was his first wife. Mm-hmm. And she died very young, in her early 20s. Mm-hmm. That was my mother's mother. I never knew her.
Her name was?
Mary Starks, S-T-A-R-K-S. Mary Starks Vance. Mm-hmm. And I understand she was a very independent woman who did not socialize. Her best friend was a lady who, well, she wasn't living on West Queen Street at that time, but her name was Dora Brown. And my mother said that was her best friend. She wasn't, my grandmother wasn't a gregarious type at all. And people seemingly felt that had she been more closely connected with her neighbors, that she might have lived longer. She washed a lot of clothes one day, and I understand she got wet. And at that time, people died from the flu and fever and tuberculosis. And I heard Mr. Ben Keyes talk about it one time. She was very, very ill. And no one knew. Mm-hmm. And it seems that my grandfather was trying to take care of her as best he could, and I'm sure Anderson Hospital would not have taken her at that time. This was when my mother was born in 1917, and she was 2 years old. My mother was 2 years old when her mother died, so that was about 1919.
Well, that was the year of the flu.
Yes. Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, she died from the flu.
Let me take you on an aside, if I may, and then we'll come back mm-hmm. to talk about her and your family. You mentioned the problems of flu, tuberculosis, and other types mm-hmm. of things. Do you have any sense of whether black people were more or less susceptible to any of these diseases than white people during that era?
Do I believe they were?
Or were not? Do you have any sense that it made a difference? Were white and black people fairly equally susceptible to these diseases, or one more than the other?
I believe that black people have been more susceptible to diseases, not only now, I believe it's true now, but even then, because of diet. For an example, when you read the stories about some of the slaves who weren't even allowed to eat the food that they cooked, certainly you did not put jelly or jam on a biscuit. If you read Margaret Walker's Jubilee, where I believe it was, well, one of the cooks would wear great big aprons with pockets and would slip some biscuits into the pockets. And when you read the slaves, and you read about the diet, the corn pone, and the kinds of things that they ate, you wonder how they lived as long as they did.
What about?
There was no such thing as a balanced diet. You just ate enough to get full. And in bullwhip days, the children, many of them ate from the trough. They would just put the food in the trough and no forks or spoons or anything like that, and they just gobbled up whatever was there. And during that time, I'm sure that there was no focus on diet or nutrition or anything like that. You just ate what you had. So therefore, your immune system did not have the capacity to fight off germs and diseases. The mail lady who delivers on this street told me that she had been delivering here in Pendleton for 19 years, and that she has lost far more black customers than she has white. Now, there's a reason for this.
About, but probably a bit earlier than the time of Mary Stark Spence's death, mm-hmm. the medical examiner for the city of Charleston put out a report on the greater susceptibility of black people to a number of different diseases. And although I am not well informed on this myself, a medical researcher from Columbia, whom you probably have met, says that along with the sickle cell traits, there are particular susceptibilities to lung problems. You mentioned the difficulty or the impossibility of going to Anderson Hospital. What types of medical treatments would have been available? Who would have taken care of somebody ill? Doctors?
To tell you the truth, growing up as a child, whenever anyone passed away, they were always at home. I never heard of anyone going to hospital as a child. People would sit up at night in shifts, and you just did what you could to heal yourself. But I don't ever recall that growing up in Pendleton, ever recall hearing of anyone going to the hospital.
Did a doctor ever come to your home while
now,
you were growing
up? Now, there were two white doctors here, Dr. Horton and Dr. Bickley, and they would come to your home. Mm-hmm. I don't remember any of them ever having come here. I remember Dr. Bickley at one time visited my step-grandmother once when she was ill. But now they would go into the homes. But fortunately, I suppose our family, you know, we were supposed to be rather healthy. I don't remember them.
Would you or your grandparents have to have paid a doctor at the time of his visit, or could he be paid later?
A lot of credit went on in those days. I suppose he could have been paid later.
What about midwives? Did they help take care of birthing?
Oh, yes. When I was born, there was a midwife. And her mother was, her name was Mrs. Emma Vance. But she was no relation to the Vance family.
Were there other midwives in the neighborhood?
Yes, but she's the only one that I ever heard of. I'm sure there were others. And in your study, have any of those been mentioned?
I don't know that we've talked about any in Pendleton. We've talked about some in the Calhoun area and perhaps some other areas, but I believe nobody's even asked that question before about Pendleton. What about medicines?
I remember castor oil. Oh, and calomel more so than anything else. Because it seems that we were well cared for. We were very well cared for. And it seems that every year, for some reason, healthy, whether you were ill or not, you had to take castor oil. I did not understand that at all. And it was awful. And the night before, well, you were prepped for it. And there was a little pink pill called a calomel. And you took that the night before, and all night I would not be able to sleep because I knew what was coming the next morning. And the castor oil was always warm and horrid. And you just took that one spoonful, and that was it.
So what you remember primarily are what we would call patent medicines as opposed to pills or prescriptions?
As opposed to?
Prescriptions and?
We never took a lot of medicine here. No, we didn't do that. I hear people taking certain things for to have a movement or something like that. No, we just, my mother Connors and my mother always had balanced meals. Mm-hmm. So really, I don't really remember a lot about medicine or anything like that. They weren't involved in these herbs or anything of that nature.
Okay, this was quite a digression. Let's go back then to Mary Starks. You said that
yes.
She died as a comparatively young woman.
Very young.
And you, do you by chance know Mary Starks' parents' names?
No, I don't. I think that in my study I will, because she has two relatives in Greenville who I am to meet. Mm-hmm. I understand they are in their 90s, mm-hmm. and they would have known my grandmother.
Oh, wonderful. Was she from Pendleton, or do you know?
I saw something on my mother's birth certificate.
Okay.
The midwife at the time my mother was born, on September 17th, 1915, her name was S.E. McGee, and she lived at 106 Valentine Street in Greenville. Mm-hmm. And I have been told by a Mrs. Inez Coleman that the McGees still live at 106 Valentine Street in Greenville. And these are the elderly ladies that I am to meet. She's going to take me over there.
Do you think this means then that your mother may have been born in Greenville?
No. My mother was born in Pendleton, mm-hmm. in a house that is right across from the Keys Barn. Mm-hmm. And that's the home that Mr. Eddie Green and his family lived in. Mm-hmm. And the son lives there now, and the house is being preserved. Mm-hmm. I would really like for you to take a look at it. But my mother was born in that same house in 1917. Obviously, my grandfather and my grandmother must have been tenants there, because that was not his home. They moved from there, and of course he had his own home.
What did your grandfather do?
He was a laborer, mm-hmm. and he was also a lay minister at King's Chapel Church. You know, are you familiar with the Santee Cooper Bridge?
Yes.
Well, he helped build it. And I remember he would be down there all week long. Mm-hmm. And he would come home on Saturdays. Because I can remember seeing him come up the hill and how we would all dash out to meet him.
Do you have his birth and death dates?
He was born in April 1888. Mm-hmm. And he died in 1968.
So 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently then he married a second time after your grandmother
died.
Yes,
after my grandmother passed away, he married Sally Graffin Reed. And she passed away just this past year. Mm-hmm. And they had four children. Three girls and a boy.
When your grandfather remarried them, did your mother stay with her stepmother or go to...
My mother and yes. her sister continued to live with Mother Conyers.
Okay, so they...
They never went with him and the new family.
I presume then, or should I presume, that your contacts with your step-grandmother were more limited because she had not been involved in the immediate raising?
Well, the children, her children, mm-hmm. my mother and I, of course, they would have been my mother's half-sisters.
Mm-hmm.
But we never spoke in terms of half.
Mm-hmm.
It was always sister mm-hmm. and brother mm-hmm. because we were always close. Mm-hmm.
Okay, give us
very close.
The names, if you will, of your mother and her sister. We don't have
okay, my mother is Mary Louise.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Louise Vance Martin.
And her
and that's,
sister.
That's who the library is named mm-hmm. for. Clara Vance Weeks. Weekes.
And your... Father?
My stepfather.
Your stepfather.
Lincoln Arthur Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think I showed you his picture.
Mm-hmm.
He was a JCPenney executive.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a picture of him with Mr. Penney and Mrs. Penney. Did I show you that?
I don't think so. Where did he work for JCPenney?
In New York City.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Let me show you.
Let's see, this is a picture of your stepfather.
Yes.
Lincoln Martin. Mm-hmm. Was he from Pendleton?
No.
Where was he from?
He originally came from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went to New York and joined the JCPenney company.
Mm-hmm.
And he became one of the executives. Company.
How did he meet your mother?
Well, he met my mother there in New Rochelle.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought that she was the most beautiful woman in the world. He was 30 years her senior.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just one of the kindest, most compassionate human beings I've ever met. He traveled a lot. And I can remember when I was in college, and he would go to Europe, and he would always bring something back very interesting for me. he was a very well-read man, a very aristocratic man. And at that time, for a white man to fall in love with a black woman, it was just not the kind of thing that America smiled on. And as a result, he paid a price for it. He was a member of the Wackagill Country Club in New York. He had to cancel his membership. Also, he was, let me see, there was a group of them who met every Friday evening for bridge, the Penny people and some of the Woolworth people. He eventually lost his spot at the table. The phone calls, the volume of the phone calls diminished. And none of this seemed to really bother him. The doorbell didn't ring quite as often. And then after a point, not at all. But he and my mother were so close and they were so secure with each other that none of this bothered him as long as she was there. He passed away in 1968. He was 83 years old. And of course, she was right there at his side. It was hardening the arteries, I understand. It caused his demise.
You mentioned the many social costs. Did the marriage affect his career with J.C. Penney Company?
Well, by that time he had retired. He did early retirement. And by that time he had retired. So there was no sense of fear as far as losing his job or anything like that.
When did he and your mother marry?
The exact year? I have the birth certificate. I'll show you.
Approximately. Okay, from the marriage certificate, they were married in October 14, 1961.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I assume.
In Mount Vernon, New York.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where in New York did they live?
In Bronxville.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Just north of New York City itself.
Yes, about 20 minutes north of New York City. Where they lived, it was a lovely lane. It was called the Bronxville Knolls, mm-hmm. and it was just a stone's throw from Sarah Lawrence College.
Where even today within the town, black people are hardly seen.
Black people did not live in Bronxville at all, not even Jews. Mm-hmm. But they did.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Should I ask
you? And to tell you the truth, it wasn't far from where the Kennedys lived years ago. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Kennedys were not welcome there either because they were Irish. Mm-hmm. And they lived there on the lane not far away for a few years before moving to Massachusetts.
Should I ask you, I'm going to anyhow, if there were any difficulties associated in Pendleton with your having a white stepfather?
No, because he didn't visit Pendleton. Mm-hmm. No, I don't recall his having come to Pendleton to stay any length of time. I can remember. No, he did not.
Mm-hmm. Surely the friends and family, however, knew.
Oh, yes.
It
oh,
made
yes.
no difference to them.
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's one step missing in that story. How did your mother get to New Rochelle in the first place?
Well, when my mother was 20, she went to New York to work.
Why?
Well, if you had any idea what it was like in Pendleton in the 30s, and if you were black and you had the opportunity to leave, you would have left also. For an example, when I graduated from college, there was no reason why I should return to Pendleton to look for a job, because one doesn't go to college, graduate, and then come out and pick cotton. I go to work in someone's kitchen. The jobs were very limited.
What type
of opportunities could you